Austin Stogner has a critical offseason ahead, and so do the Oklahoma Sooners managing his workflow. We'll talk about why on today's episode of Locked On Sooners.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Sooner Nation? Welcome to Locked On Sooners. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. My name is John Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at John9Williams. My buddy here is Josh Helmer. You can follow him on Twitter at JoshOnRef. You can also hear him Monday through Friday from 9 to noon on 94.7 The Ref in Norman. And Josh, one of the really interesting storylines that's come out of spring practice on Tuesday was just the lack of depth at the tight end position for the Oklahoma Sooners this spring due to injuries to Caden Helms, Jason Llewellyn, the four-star tight end duo that came in the 2022 signing class, putting a lot of emphasis and a lot of the focus on the returning Austin Stogner. So Josh, just first of all, how important is he to Oklahoma's offense and their success in the 2023 season?
Well, I think that Austin Stogner could be one of the most important pieces for Oklahoma offensively, no doubt. We've seen Stogner show us the signs that he's ready to be not a good but an elite tight end in college football. I think that's what was so weird when Austin Stogner – I think it's why it's surprised so many Oklahoma fans because, yeah, it you know, his career here ended with you know, kind of some injuries derailed that season. And then sure, you had Braden Willis to tangle with in the tight end room. But I think a lot of people kind of had their mindset around the idea that Stogner was going to be kind of that next Mark Andrews-ish type of tight end at Oklahoma. And so then when he elected to transfer out, it was, I'm speaking for myself, I was a little shocked by it. I was a little puzzled by it. And we had seen glimpses of that. So just that alone, John, what we know Stogner is capable of, what we've seen from Stogner in the past, that's in there. We've seen those types of plays. We've seen the big grab against Texas and so on and so forth. So this is a player that, to me, absolutely has the chance to kind of unlock that intermediate of the field, which at times maybe Oklahoma wasn't all that great at a season ago, John.
Yeah, and someone who really could have a big-time breakout season, similar to what Braden Willis had this past year. You know, Braden Willis, maybe a little bit better of a blocker, but Austin Stogner, potentially a little bit better receiver. I mean, we've seen a little bit more, or we had seen a little bit more of him, you know, through the 2020-2021 seasons than we had Braden Willis. And Braden Willis had a fantastic 2022 campaign for Oklahoma and is probably going to end up being drafted. I would not be surprised to see Braden Willis drafted within the first four or five rounds this year because he's a quote-unquote dual threat tight end, somebody who can block in the running game, is a capable pass catcher as well, someone you can just integrate into your offense right away, even as a rookie in two tight end sets. So, but speaking of Stogner, I do think that he does hold a lot of importance for this team through the offseason because they don't have Caden Helms and Jason Llewellyn. I mean, they're going to have to rely on Stogner to take all those tight end snaps. Now they're going to bring along some other guys. They've got the Cameron University transfer, Josh Venuel, a basketball player, hadn't played tight end since a sophomore year. They're very high on him and what he brings to the table based on his traits, athleticism, things like that. But there's a lot of things that tight ends are responsible for. And that's why there's such a difficult transition sometimes from high school to college and college to the NFL, because there's so much that a tight end has to do. It's not just, you know, run routes. They are as in depth in the running game as the offensive line is. They have to be as in tune with everything that happens in the run scheme as the offensive line does, because they're just as much a big, or they're as important a part as, you know, the right tackle can be at times. And so it might take some time to get a guy like Finuel. I'm probably just butchering his name. I haven't heard anybody say it, so I got to do the best I can with it. It's going to take time to get him fully integrated into the offense. There might be some packages in which he participates, but for now, it's kind of like when you're running 11 personnel and you have a tight end on the field, it's going to be Stogner. You know, they're going to work some other guys in, but it's Stogner, and it's Stogner all the time. But, you know, John Hoover wrote a really great article about what they're doing. They're trying to include him, you know, Finuel and Hayden Bray getting some tight end reps as well. But again, those guys are making transitions. But one thing that Jeff Lebby spoke of is having to use a lot of different, you know, personnel looks. And I think that's really going to be kind of beneficial for Oklahoma to see more four wide receiver sets, five wide receiver sets, you know, two running back, three wide receiver sets, given those are areas where they do have seemingly quite a bit of depth, especially at running back, you know, getting Javonte Barnes and Gavin Sawchuk on the field together. And dare I say, get Dalen Smothers and Gavin Sawchuk on the field together in the backfield with three wide receivers. And that could be very, very dangerous for the Sooners. So they're kind of forced into a situation where, okay, you're going to just have to get more playmakers on the field that maybe you wouldn't otherwise because you don't have the tight end depth. So you might be, it might on one hand kind of be a good thing that you're having to experiment with a lot of different personnel groupings because you're getting to see a lot more guys and get them first team reps where you might not otherwise because you're running out of your base 11 personnel package.
I just can't wait to see what happens for Stogner at Oklahoma, because again, I go back to the 2020 season. I mean, it looked like Stogner was going to be the next great tight end at Oklahoma, right? The three game stretch was really, really good where he had, listen to this, John, 16 grabs for, I can't even quickly enough add up the yardage here, but 83, 74, 56 yards versus K-State, Iowa State, and Texas. So what? 200 some odd yards and over the course of three games and 16 grabs. And then the Kansas situation happens, right? Where he gets, you know, takes the shot as he's catching, I believe it was a touchdown grab, was it not? That he got
something over the middle of the field and kind of got hit in the leg and hyperextended knee sort of a thing. Late in the game too, if I remember right.
Well, didn't it turn into a staph infection situation?
Yes.
To where, then he lost all that weight and you come back the following season and it just kind of never really, 2021 at OU for whatever reason, didn't really materialize in that same way for Stogner. And maybe it was just physically not being all the way back. But all of that is to say, you know, I think he's much more the player we saw in 2020 at Oklahoma, John, than the 14 grabs, 166 we saw in 2021 at OU. And I think it could be more maybe than what we saw in 2020. I mean, I think it can be that 5-5-6 grabs, that trio of games versus K-State, Iowa State, and Texas. I think that could be more or less the season for Stogner. I think that's fully doable for him, but managing the spring obviously is going to be massive because he does have that injury history there. And so you are limited at tight end, as you've discussed. So probably, you know, I think to me, the spring then becomes about, okay, I don't know how much, I mean, language could probably, I guess, be quite a bit different, right? Because you're talking about, you had Lincoln Riley then, and now you've got Jeff Lebby now. So again, I don't know, for somebody that's played as many snaps as Austin Stogner, John, how much genuinely different college language can be from your offense to this offense to that offense. Now, it can be different. It can be different. I'm not totally trying to downplay it. I just think that, you know, probably even with that being, to me, the most important piece of the puzzle for Stogner this spring, I wouldn't be putting him in a situation to take a bunch of hits. I would try and limit that as much as possible and focus on him learning the playbook.
Yeah, and he even mentioned after practice on Tuesday that, you know, there's a difference in just the tempo in which, you know, South Carolina's offense ran, which was more pro style. You huddle up a little bit more. And what Jeff Lebby does, which we know he wants to go fast and he wants to get to the line of scrimmage quick, get the play in, get the play off. And so there's a transition period for him on that front. But he's going to get a lot of opportunities to practice that this spring and summer as well, you know, being kind of the starting tight end and not really having much competition for snaps too, because you look at it and you go back to that 2021 season. I mean, he's rotating with Jeremiah Hall. He's rotating with Braden Willis. They got a three-man rotation there at the H-back position under Lincoln Riley, and some of it by necessity. Jeremiah Hall obviously needed the snaps. He's just a playmaker. You got to get him on the field. Braden Willis, he's one of your best blockers. Got to get him on the field. You just had a lot of talent in the H-back room at that time. Well, now you don't. Now you have Austin Stogner, and that's pretty much it. You know, Blake Smith, he's played a little bit as well, but you're not going to be relying on him for pass catching duties. So like you said, you got to kind of manage Stogner's workload a little bit, let him get more of the mental reps in. And again, it just gives you an opportunity to just kind of diversify your offense, or at least get a chance to see what it could look like if you run out a bunch of different personnel groupings. But Josh, coming up, we're going to talk through all 16 crystal balls that have been issued for the Oklahoma Sooners in the 2024 cycle, where they stand currently. And I mean, what are we looking at realistically? But first, let's talk to you about our friends over at FanDuel.
That's a lot of potential excitement for Oklahoma fans. Speaking of excitement, it's an exciting time in the NBA season, exciting time in the NHL season. And it's exciting because guess what? Spring training's coming to a close, and all of a sudden it's going to be Major League Baseball season, which means there's lots of opportunities to get in on the action. Perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book. The FanDuel Sportsbook app, safe, secure, super easy to use. And we've been singing the praises. No sweat, first bet, up to $1,000 bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. They've got all of the parlays you can put together for a chance at a bigger payout with, again, your same game parlay. So don't miss the chance. Get your no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA.
All right. So if you're interested in following along with us as we go, I wrote the article over at SoonersWire.com, just taking an updated look at all of the crystal balls, because you've got recent crystal balls in the case of like Jaden Hardy and Jeremiah Newcomb that, you know, Newcomb committed. Jaden Hardy, he looks like he's on the verge of committing with all the different projections that are coming his way, or coming the Sooners' way for him. But you got, you know, projections that date back to last summer, the fall, winter time. So just kind of take a look at where these things stand. And let's start with Michael Hawkins. He's kind of like the first one, the more imminent commitment. April 8th is when he's going to commit, Josh. And really for him, what it comes down to is Oklahoma or TCU. Prior to Kendall Briles moving from Arkansas to TCU, it was Oklahoma and Arkansas. It seemed to be a pretty tight two-team race. TCU makes things a little bit more interesting because of the local aspect of that. His family's just up the 121 into from Fort Worth to the Frisco Emerson area. So there's potential that, you know, he could kind of quote unquote stay at home. Now, if you're from the DFW Metroplex like I am, you know that that trip from TCU from, you know, Fort Worth to Frisco, that's not just a quick jaunt. That's like an hour, hour and a half easily. So that's not an easy jaunt. But that could provide a little bit more of an intriguing aspect to his recruitment there.
Well, and ultimately, you know, it boils down to how do you feel about that offensive coordinator situation versus Jeff Lebby at Oklahoma, more than likely. Or, you know, beyond that, you know, you combine and can – you know, compare and contrast and then combine Jeff Lebby with just what seems to be where the heart has more or less been set on, you know, reading the tea leaves seems like it's been Oklahoma. That can be one final attractive sales pitch from TCU about, hey, we've got this and that to offer in terms of here's what the playbook looks like. Here's your opportunity to step in and maybe play straight away a little bit quicker than maybe Oklahoma would be willing to make that offer. But there's something about the prestige of Oklahoma and then the heart kind of wanting what it wants. And I think that what the heart wants and has wanted all along with Michael Hawkins, even though there's been a delay, has been Oklahoma.
Yeah. And we turn our attention to another guy who is up in the air right now between Oklahoma and TCU with a little bit of Alabama sneaking in as well. And that's Bryant Wesco. Wesco recently minted a five-star prospect in the top 247 update. Comes out of Midlothian, Texas. A dude that I've said looks a lot like CeeDee Lamb. Reminds me a lot of what CeeDee Lamb did on the football field. Again, comes down to Oklahoma, TCU, Josh. It's going to be an interesting battle. We got no commitment timeline on him. And so really it could become an even more sorry, more schools could get involved with Wesco the longer his recruitment comes, because the dude is just talented. And it wouldn't be surprising to me to see him end up with an Alabama, or to see him end up at Georgia, places like that, because he's one of the best wide receivers in the 2024 class.
Well, and you know me, the book of Josh Helmer here says Oklahoma not going to have a bunch of problems, you know, signing, luring top skill talent to OU. Having said that, you know, one thing that I'll acknowledge here is just scrolling through, like, we're going to go through all of this, obviously, but the crystal balls, this is right now the only one for a wide receiver for Oklahoma. So from that standpoint, this feels like, you know, a kind of an important get for OU, and you're one mediocre season away from folks really cranking up the heat on not Emmett Jones individually, because obviously he just took the thing over, but just on Oklahoma collectively, where's the star wide receiver talent? I think you're going to be okay there. I think you've already got guys on campus, but those two factors combining, John, where if wide receiver play is one of the reasons that this OU team doesn't make a big leap forward, then all of a sudden you combine it with, if you don't get Wesco, this is kind of the big receiver name on the board right now. It feels like it's got some serious importance to it.
It does, because it's the one they've kind of been pushing hardest for. It seems like since Emmett Jones came to Oklahoma, you got to land it. I mean, that would be a good get right out of the gate for Jones as Oklahoma's wide receiver coach. Turning our attention to another coach who's done a great job, it seems like he's kind of narrowed his focus in the 2024 running back class. We've talked about it before: Caden Durham, Xavier Robinson, Tavani Mazzell. I mean, talking to my guy Parker Thune over at OU Insider, it really seems there's a strong possibility that they do take three running backs in this class. Again, three guys with very different skill sets, but Caden Durham, Xavier Robinson in particular, seem to be the two that they're really heavily invested in. And then Tavani Mazzell, that one just kind of came out of nowhere after he decommitted from Georgia.
Well, and, you know, the different backs, 5'9", 180 for Durham. Robinson, 6'2", 218, 6' 195 for Tavani Mazzell. So, I mean, even just the physical frames tell you that probably in some ways they're a little bit different runners. And, you know, look, you really can't get enough running backs. You're not going to take more than three, John, but look, if you can land all three, that's great. And probably you'll welcome that.
Yeah, 100%, because you're going to have time to develop them. And we've seen that this coaching staff, DeMarco Murray in particular, wants to use a running back rotation. He was the, I don't want to say beneficiary, but he was the, he saw what happens when you get overworked as a runner. Went during his, you know, league leading 2014 season with the Dallas Cowboys, he carried the ball something like 390 times that year, and he was never the same after. You know, and that's not because his skill set just dropped off. It's just workage, like workload usage at running back. It wears on people. Like, you have a certain amount of time as a running back and a certain amount of carries before you just kind of start to drop off. And I think he understands that and wants to, you know, yeah, give his guys touches and give them opportunities at the collegiate level, but he also wants to kind of not overwork them and preserve kind of their future a little bit. And I think there's something to be said for that. Moving to the offensive line, Josh, we talked about Caden Massey, the 8-man, you know, highly thought of prospect as far as Oklahoma's concerned, very athletic, very tough, you know, a big dude, 6'7", has a lot of room to add muscle, add weight to his frame, but moves really, really well, plays that 8-man football. And you got to be able to move if you play 8-man football, which is going to be really intriguing for the Oklahoma Sooners. But then there's Casey Poe, our guy again, Parker Thune. He's still very much believing that Casey Poe is going to be a Sooner. He had a crystal ball for him back in November. Obviously, a 4-star guy is going to be heavily recruited by a lot of schools. But Casey Poe still seemingly, you know, heading in the right direction for the Oklahoma Sooners.
6'5", 280, interior offensive lineman is what he's projected as. And, oh, by the way, you're contending with Alabama, TCU, Texas A&M, which, again, I mean, high-profile, blue-chip, 4-star kid out of Lindale, Texas. There's going to be an A&M, a TCU involved, and probably an Alabama or Georgia or somebody of the like.
Yeah, and they'll have to fight with that one for the to the finish. You know, not that he's, you know, somebody who could potentially flip, but you know, you have to keep recruiting those guys even after you get a commitment from them. Again, there's no timetable on when he might commit, but because of the offers that he has on the table already, Oklahoma's going to kind of be in a dogfight until the very end for this one. Flipping over to the defensive line, Josh, we got three crystal balls in on three highly regarded prospects in the 2024 defensive line class. Obviously, David Stone, Williams Nwaneri, and Nigel Smith. Let's start with David Stone. So Stone, you know, he's got six crystal balls in on him. Four of them favor Oklahoma. The two most recent ones from December favor Michigan State. I think nobody really knows right now where this thing lands. He's taking visits to Miami. He's taking visits to USC. He's living it up, enjoying the recruitment life because he's one of the most highly regarded defensive line prospects in this class. I still feel really good that it's going to be Oklahoma. But again, this is going to be one of those recruitments that probably lingers on throughout the summer, maybe even into the fall, much like a David Hicks recruitment did. But I won't necessarily say I'm 100% confident that Stone ends up with the Sooners. We've seen Mel Tucker and Michigan State come down into the Oklahoma City, more Norman, you know, metro area and pull high level defensive line prospects out of Norman, out of Oklahoma City, out of Moore.
Yeah, I just think the connection to the state of Oklahoma really helps OU in this recruitment of David Stone here. Someone that, oh, by the way, went down to the IMG Academy, and then all of a sudden there's that little pull to get back home. So you've seen a little bit that's not just Oklahoma, and yet there is still that draw. And obviously we see what GK is doing on the recruitment here. So it's something where I think the heart is always going to pull a little bit to Oklahoma, but I'm definitely not sold that that's where this winds up, at least not. You know, I if you ask me to pick today, I would pick Oklahoma, but it's not some 75-25 margin. I think that Oklahoma is always, John, in this recruitment, going to be one of the final couple of selections. Now, whether they are ultimately the final destination, we'll see, but they're going to be involved late here. I'm not ready to just, you know, slam dunk because of the high-profile nature of this recruitment that he's absolutely going to wind up at OU.
Yeah, and that's going to be one of those very, very difficult decisions for a kid who could go anywhere in the country. Oklahoma is right up there. But then we got Williams Nwaneri as well. It seems like everything is trending towards a commitment to Oklahoma. Every crystal ball that's in on him favors Oklahoma. And it's been a really strong push over the last few weeks, it seems like, that all these crystal balls have been coming out. So feeling better about Nwaneri to Oklahoma than Stone to Oklahoma at this point. Now there's a little bit of a connection there. Nwaneri plays at Lee Summit. That's where Caden Green went to high school as well. So there's a bit of a, you know, teammate connection. How much that matters in this recruitment, who knows, but it definitely gives them a little bit of a foot in the door, and it allows Nwaneri to kind of get a player's perspective on what the program's like during the spring as he makes his transition into the program too. So it could really help them.
Oh, well, there's no doubt that it helps right now. Is it some, again, deciding factor? I don't know the nature of their, you know, relationship, how close they are, but it's going to help. It's going to help tilt the scales a little bit. I think more than anything, it's the Todd Bates and Miguel Chavis factors at play here. Brent Venables factor at play here, and the opposite of David Stone, right, at play here, to where you know you're hoping that home is where the heart is with Stone, and meanwhile with Nwaneri, when you look up and see Missouri there, you're kind of trying to go in and pluck a really talented kid away and tell him that, yeah, home's great and all, but home's down here in Norman.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit on the live show last night and how Oklahoma's doing a really good job recruiting the KC area. So it would not be surprising to see them pull another big-time product out of that Kansas City metro area in Nwaneri. So, and then there's Nigel Smith, Josh, a four-star defensive line prospect, a guy who's a top 100 player in the 2024 cycle, who's kind of just, I feel like, maybe a little bit of the forgotten guy, but someone that almost feels like the safe you know, recruitment for the Sooners. It sounds like he's going to go to Oklahoma, and you just haven't heard much about him otherwise since the crystal balls, you know, projected him to Oklahoma back in November.
Yeah. I don't think we should be sleeping on Nigel Smith. I mean, he's got every opportunity. I get where Stone and Winery are at on the recruiting board, but look, 6'5", 260 out of Melissa, Texas, every reason that he's the four-star kid that he is, has a chance to finish, you know, as a five-star, depending on how this next little bit goes. And really even beyond that, John, you know, whether or not he's where he's at right now, 52nd overall in the composite ranking by 24/7 Sports. Let's say that holds up and that's where he finishes. I mean, look, this doesn't guarantee that either Stone. Exactly. It doesn't guarantee that Stone or Winery are somehow definitively going to be better players at Oklahoma if they all sign with OU. So I love him. I love his tape. And if he's the safe option of the three, then great, right? Then bring him aboard. And who knows, he might wind up being the best option of the three.
Yeah, you look at Oklahoma's five-star signees over the last, you know, or in the modern era, since recruiting rankings and ratings and stuff like that started coming out in the early 2000s, and the hit rate's not great. So just because a player is labeled a five-star doesn't mean that they're going to be a big hit when they get to campus. So, I mean, take those fours. I bet the hit rate for four stars is a little bit higher as far as Oklahoma's concerned. But, yeah, Nigel Smith, every bit the talented prospect that those two other guys are. Going to the cornerback position – or no, sorry, linebacker, Peyton Pierce, a guy that for quite some time looked like an Oklahoma lean, looked like he was heading that way. Our guys over at OU Insider had projected him to come to Oklahoma. Now it seems like Ohio State has picked up a lot of momentum on the recruiting trail in recent weeks. Two crystal balls favor him going to Ohio State. One is from a Notre Dame insider. The other one, I can't remember exactly where that one's from. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. It's from Ohio State insider. So not all that surprising. We'll see how those crystal balls hold up, but it would be a bit of a bummer if they missed out on that, because it seemed like they were the favorite to win it for some time.
Do we need to phone our man Parker Thune and say, hey, man, your confidence from May 8th, 2022 was a 9 on the confidence meter here? Do we got to let him know to like tick that down a couple of notches or something? I mean, he hasn't changed it.
No, you plug your crystal ball and you got to stay with it, man. The next one, we'll finish up with the defensive backs real quick before we get out of here. Eli Bowen, the younger brother of Peyton Bowen, it seems like they've got the inside track on that one. Would be kind of surprising if he doesn't end up in Norman, but at the same time, like, you never know if the little brother wants to kind of carve his own path. He's going to have every opportunity out there as well. He's a very highly regarded kid, 4-star prospect out of Denton Guyer. And then we talked about Jeremiah Newcomb a bunch this week, but all those crystal balls that came in, they held true. And then Aaron Flowers, the safety out of Forney, Texas. This is the one that we talked about a little bit on the live show, where it seems like USC is kind of gaining some headway in this recruitment. On3's predicting Flowers to go to USC. He's going to commit on April 7th. He's not committing 3 weeks ago. He's committing on April 7th. We'll see where that ends up. But again, I'm not going to count Oklahoma out of any recruitment until it's all said and done. Josh, just a few more here. And feel free to interject when you have some thoughts. But Michael Patterson McDonald, very tight with David Stone. According to Parker, these are guys that have a really, really strong relationship. So it could be one of those things where Stone goes, Patterson McDonald goes, or vice versa. So that'll be a really interesting recruitment to watch. And then comes Jaden Hardy, the 4-star defensive back prospect out of Louisville, a guy that, like Jeremiah Newcomb, he's picking up predictions all over the place from rivals on 3, 247 Sports to land with Oklahoma. It seems like Newcomb, a commitment could be imminent on that front.
You know, and I just wanted to say, as we're rolling through some of these names here, just a heartfelt thoughts to Peyton Bowen and Eli Bowen and the Bowen family. You know, if you missed it, just to pass the message along to you, obviously they're dealing with some tragedy. Their sister passed away. after giving birth. So just as we're rolling through this, you say, you know, Eli Bowen's name, and it just like a stark reminder that, man, life is it's really precious. And just didn't want to, you know, go through the Bowen family's name from a recruitment standpoint and not at least, you know, mention and share our condolences.
It, yeah, absolute tragedy. And you feel for that family as they're going through that. It's a time that's supposed to be joyful. And I'm sure in some ways they're seeing this little baby and they're finding some joy, but also a lot of heartache. So if you pray, lift up prayers, and there's a GoFundMe going around right now to raise money for funeral expenses and just a memorial fund as well, probably to support the child in the future. So yeah, that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Sooners. Thanks so much for tuning in and being part of the show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube, hit that notification bell to let you know when new episodes drop. We'll be back with more episodes later this week. We'll talk more recruitment. We'll talk Oklahoma softball as they get ready for a big time matchup with a top 10 team in the Texas Longhorns at Hall of Fame Stadium in Oklahoma City. But until next time, he's Josh Helmer. I'm John Williams. We'll talk to you then. Boomer Sooner.